And we'll begin. And we're going to begin with a reading. And it's from Genesis chapter 28, reading verses 10 to 19. Jacob left Beersheba and went to Haran. He came to a certain place and camped for the night, since the sun had set. He took one of the stones there, set it under his head, and lay down to sleep. And he dreamed. A stairway was set on the ground, and it reached all the way to the sky. Angels of God were going up and going down it. Double click. Then God was right before him, saying, I am God, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. I'm giving the ground on which you are sleeping to you and your descendants. Your descendants will be as the dust of the earth. They'll stretch from west to east and from north to south. All the families of the earth will bless themselves in you and your descendants. Yes, I'll stay with you. I'll protect you wherever you go, and I'll bring you back to this very ground. I'll stick with you until I've done everything I promised you. Jacob woke up from his sleep. He said, God is in this place, truly, and I didn't even know it. He was terrified. He whispered in awe, incredible, wonderful, holy. This is God's house. This is the gate of heaven. Jacob was up first thing in the morning. He took the stone he had used for his pillow and stood up as a memorial pillar and poured oil over it. He christened the place Bethel, God's house. Well, if you were at the church away day in September, hands up those who were there. It's a good day, wasn't it? Very good day. Well, you'll remember Ken Benjamin, he from the other CBC, that was Chichester Baptist Church, which made for a lot of confusion on the day when we said, could members of CBC go over there and members of CBC go over there? But there we are. You'll have heard him talk about LICC's outreach program, Make a Difference Where You Are. Now, I actually work with Mark Green at LICC, that's London Institute of Contemporary Christianity. I worked with him to develop this initiative a few years ago, and I've watched it grow in the years since. So it was a great pleasure to be on the receiving end of Ken's presentations. And I was really pleased when Andrew decided to start this year's teaching program with this five-part series about life on the front line. Front line is, or the front line Sundays or the front line course is the discipleship program that builds on Make a Difference. We've heard various interpretations of what our front lines are. I'm going to cast another one in. In short, I say our front line is wherever our faith meets the world and the people in it. And this series explores why, where, and how we should approach that. So it's quite a wide definition of the front line when you think of it that way. But why is it important that we should explore this? Well, at the last count, around 6% of people in the UK are regular churchgoers. By regular, I mean attending at least once a month. So this is how they appear when gathered together on a Sunday. It looks a bit small and defensive, doesn't it, there? But the picture changes when they get out and about to their places of work or vocation during the rest of the week, which we started exploring in the activity, when they head out to their front lines. Sort of church, the way they're positioning it there is a bit, you remember the good old days of Formula One, they had to pull in for a pit stop and refuel as well as change tires? So church on Sunday is like a pit stop. You come in, you get refueled, get charged up, new tires on, bang, out in the world, which is where the real work starts. Right? It's said on there, isn't it, it feels sometimes like we're too few to make a difference. But we're not. Right? So this week, today, We're going to look at how we can take our faith with us onto our front lines to engage it with the world around us and make a difference wherever we are, so that we can be as faithful to our witness to God when we're scattered as we are in our worship when we're gathered. I always had difficulty to see God in the middle of an advertising agency. But looking back, I'm reminded that's where I met Mark Green in the first place. So God was at work there. When Jacob did realize that God was in that place, it completely changed his attitude towards it. So much so that he renamed it Bethel, claiming it for God. So how can we claim our front line? And I got a couple of short stories here about people who did just that. It's a book written by Mark Green, actually, called The One About, and it says, sums up a series of conversations he's had with people about how they engage their faith with their workplace. First one is called Victoria's Secret. Victoria is an apprentice hairdresser. She's 19 and she's been on the job in the job for just over a month. It's a busy salon, so there's always something to do, and it's almost always got to be done quickly. She's enjoying it. The people are upbeat, friendly, but she's been feeling the pressure. 3 weeks into the job, and her vicar prays for her, commissions her into the job. She's been more at peace since then. I, this is Mark Green, ask her, so what difference does being a Christian make to the way you wash someone's hair? I wonder what you might say if someone asked you that question about what you do every day. I wonder what you might say if you were a hairdresser. But Victoria didn't miss a beat. I pray for them as I massage in the conditioner. The second one is about the man in the tool room. Hugh makes his way across the factory floor, across to the tool room where they make the molds. There are 12 workbenches there, each 10 foot by 4 foot, with a vise on each side. There were a few small jobs on the benches, bits and bobs, repairs to this and that, but no work on new moldings, none of the work that pays the bills. It's been like this for a while, for far, far too long a while. The orders haven't been coming in. Most of the work seems to be going to China, and it's getting desperate. And if it carries on this way, the mold makers won't be staying. I wonder what you might do if your workplace were facing a crisis. On this particular day, as Hugh makes his way into the tool room, the mold makers are sitting around talking, eating lunch. He goes to each workbench, lays hands on it, and says, "Let this bench be full in Jesus' name." 12 benches, 12 prayers. And he does this for 6 working days in a row. Almost immediately after that, the managing director receives 72 orders in a single day. True story. Unprecedented, never repeated. It's a great book, this, with inspirational stories. And if you'd like a copy, I've got 10 here to give away free of charge for the first 10 people to grab me after the service. If you can't get one and you want one, just let us know and we'll get some more. So here we are, scattered during the week. But as we're exploring in the activity, we don't always stay in the same place. And as Valerie would always point out to me, there is more to life than work. Like the Beach Boys, we get around. This is for people of a certain generation. I could sing it if you like, but you wouldn't want me to. We like to socialize with friends and colleagues at pubs and restaurants. We shop, some of us a lot. We go to the gym. Squash club, we visit relatives. We go to the cinema, theatre, football, cricket, rugby. We go on holiday, days out. We go on holiday in this country and abroad. We travel by trains, boats and planes, by car, bus and bike. And we make digital journeys via email and social media. These are also front lines, because they all put us in contact with more people in more situations, in more potential Bethels. So we've looked at our activities around Canterbury and East Kent and around the world. but we've all sort of put one thing in. But we don't, we make lots of journeys. Right? So I asked Jay about his journeys. And he sat down and did like a personal audit of it. And I'm not going to go through it all, but, you know, they shop, he lists Waitrose and Asda. Is that it? Have you never been to Blue Water, the outlet center? Yeah, yeah. My bet. We all get around, don't we? Because we've got to leave. So we're all going into lots of shops. Sports, he's at gym every day. Family takes him out to the States. They're off to Arizona in there to see Diane's parents. Holidays, they get away for sports holidays when they can, in the sun or the snow. And again, as I say, they're off to Arizona. When you looked at it all, and that's excluding business, and my guess is business takes you around about quite a bit as well. And then there's the digital journeys, which I mentioned, which we shouldn't take out of it, because more and more of us are spending more time online. But I just thought, I've got this back from Jay, and it gives you another insight into Jay and the way he approaches the day, apart from anything else. He says, before I go to the gym each workday, I spend time in devotion to God. Now, I should point out, he gets up at 5 o'clock in order to get to the gym at 6. So we're talking about between 5 and 6 a.m. here. I'm currently on day 342 or 362 of the Lookout Bible reading plan on my iPad, the Bible app. I'm doing this reading study with my growth group, buddies from the US. We were all members of the same church back in the 90s, but over time we all moved to different parts of the world. But the advances in digital communications means we share our reading reflections for that day's reading plan, voice our own need for prayer, and lift up in prayer our study buddies every day. This year has been fabulous. My days are totally busy, but I'm able to get up at 5, give God the best of my day first thing with my growth group buddies, then get on with the work, gym, business, and so forth. So that's an example of someone preparing themselves each day for the day ahead and the workplace ahead of them. Just thought you'd be interested to share that. New journeys bring new front lines. In these ecological times, we're all concerned with decreasing our carbon footprint. But in these secular times, shouldn't we be as concerned with increasing our spiritual footprint? Think how you might increase your spiritual footprint. Could we be more intentional in being Christ as we get around in our travels and meet more people in more places on our front lines? If we could, we could also start to build Bethel. When we get home, maybe we could each do a personal audit, like Jay's, of all the places we go and the people we meet in them, and lift those up to God. Think about how we can claim those places for God, how, like Jacob, we can build Bethel. And here's just a few suggestions. Let's start by thinking about how we could begin to transform everyday, mundane situations. Stuck in a traffic jam or held up by the lights, pray for the people in the car in front. If it's a long wait, people behind as well. Stuck in a queue at the checkout, pray for the person in front and for the checkout operator. If it's a long queue, pray for the whole shop. Apart from anything else, it will make the time go a bit quicker. Let's give a cheery smile to that surly bus driver and forgive the guy that's just cut us up on the A28. Even love the kids with their popcorn in the cinema. Even, Andrew, congratulate Spurs fans when their team wins, even when they win at the Emirates. As we get out and about, let's try to be intentional in word and deed, to think, what would Jesus do, and then do it. And to think, what would Jesus say, and then say it. Let's try and let the fruits of the Spirit flow through us. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, goodness, faithfulness, self-control. It's difficult to hold all those together, isn't it? So why not just take one each day? This day, Lord, let me show love. This day, Lord, let me show patience. Let me show self-control. Just one a day of each of those fruits, and we'll get into a rhythm of praying it through us. Let's follow 2 Corinthians 2:15 and seek to be the aroma of Christ. And finally, when the opportunity arises, let's be courageous and speak out about our faith. Whilst out on Scent, we discovered that a lot of people are actually quite interested. And hey, if my mate is going to wang on about why Jurgen Klopp is so fantastic, then why shouldn't he listen to me do the same about Jesus? It's a fair point, I think. And the good thing is, he says, clicking away, we don't have to do it all by ourselves. There's some useful resources around that we can take advantage of. So first, make use of the church prayer team. Make sure to ask for prayer in challenging situations. If you're up against something, if you're up against someone, some issue, come to the church prayer team. That's what it's there for. Other people are already using it that way. Second, join a house discipling group for Bible study, prayer, fellowship, and sharing Bethel building experiences. We've got a few groups on the go, and we can lay on more. And ideally, we'd like everybody to be in such a group. So pick up one of these spanking new leaflets and come and have a chat with me about joining a house discipling group. And third, sign up to the Talking Jesus course, which is mentioned in the update this week. That provides you with the inspiration to share your faith and gives practical suggestions as to how to do so. So go and see Andrew about that one. And when we're about, sorry, just to come to me, when we're out and about meeting people, getting around, don't forget to invite them to Alpha. I want to close with a short reflection on the parable of the sower. I think we probably all know this one, right? Where the guy throws the seed all over the place. A lot of it goes into good soil and does very nicely, thank you. Yes, I know he's sowing wheat, not tulips, but these are prettier. But quite a bit of it ends up in some not so propitious places, on the path, onto rocky ground, amongst thorns. Which begs a couple of questions. Who was this fellow? And why was he chucking the seed all over the place? After all, seed was a fairly precious commodity in those times, and it didn't do to waste it. Why was he being so careless? Well, there are a number of interpretations of this parable, not least the one Jesus gave his disciples. But the great thing about stories is that they have different interpretations in different times and different contexts. So the interpretation I'm going with today is that the sower is God, and the seed he is throwing around willy-nilly is us, each and every one of us in here today. God is throwing us out there into the world and expecting us to grow spiritually and help those we come into contact with to do likewise. And he's not being careless. He's being extravagantly generous. He doesn't want anyone to miss out, and so he's throwing us everywhere. On the path, onto the rocks, amongst the thorns, and into good soil. Often we encounter them all at once. People with different levels of receptivity in one place, in the pub, in the supermarket, at a church event. The good soil is great to be in, sharing Jesus, seeing them start to come to faith. My conviction is that there is far more good soil out there than we realize. People sitting on the fence, people who have not rejected God, people who have just not been properly introduced to him. But fields don't come to the farmer. The farmer has to go to the fields. The good soil won't come to us. We have to go to it. And if not us, who else? However, when we're on the path, when we throw ourselves out there, when God throws us out there, and we're on the path being trampled upon, on the rocks being scorched up, and amongst the thorns being strangled, now that's a bit more challenging. But we have to remember, it's God who has thrown us there for a purpose. Because you know what? This parable doesn't say that all of the seed cast there is wasted, that some of it won't eventually come good. And as the Alpha Course so vividly demonstrates, some of the strongest Christians have come from the most unlikely and unpropitious places, from a path, from rocky ground, from the clutch of thorns. So what's this parable telling us here and now? It tells us that when we're on our front lines, there are no God places. God is Lord of everything, everyone, and every place, whether we realize it or not. So there are no-go areas. The pub, the nightclub, the football ground, Sainsbury's, B&Q, Wilco's, God's there in them all. And there are no good people. Whatever their appearance or attitude, God knows them, loves them, and wants to redeem them all. And he wants us to help him do that. No God places, no go areas, no good people. All we need to be is yes God disciples. Because we are God's transforming power, called to make a difference wherever we are. Let's pray.